text number 11 to 19. Om Jnana Tinirandasya Jnana Nama Shalakaya Chakshurun Nitamjena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vichaitanya Nam Nishtam Shvapitam Jena Purpure Dayamrutu Jnanaya Nitadatthukra Padam Sikram Mukham Karodi Vachalam Kangum Rangkaya Sikrimim Nasipatamaham Vande Shri Guru Samitarinam. The first section of chapter 2 ended with Arjuna presenting himself before Krishna as a disciple. He recognized his confusion and he recognized his faulty mentality. Karapanya dosho pahata svabhava, which from memory is one of the verses that we have to remember. Karapanya dosho pahata 2:7. Karapanya dosho pahata svabhava pichchami.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Don't worry about that then. If I test you on it, then I might make the same mistake again. It is a good verse to learn that. Panya dosho pahata svabhava. Pichchami tvam kama samudha chetasa. Hello? Hello? I've got 30 students here waiting for you to tell us what's going on. What's up? Quick. I'll call you at midday, okay, when I finish here. Thanks. I'll turn this off. This is an interruption. Not very good. So, Arjuna is presenting himself as a disciple and a soul surrendered to Krishna, which is very pleasing to Krishna. And Krishna then naturally takes on the role of teacher. Right? And he's going to enlighten his student, Arjuna. Now, this next section of the Bhagavad Gita is interesting because it deals with a couple of topics. Let's see if we can... There's two sides, basically the same topic. That which exists, right? And that which is temporary. Very much. This is what it deals with. That which is real, and that which is false, or we could say illusory. Huh? What's the opposite of illusion? I guess reality, isn't it? Huh? If we hear permanent, that which is permanent as opposed to that which is temporary, or that which is knowledge, and here I guess again illusion.
Nescience.
Is that what we said? Nescient. means not knowing. Nescience.
Okay, all right.
Nescience is an antonym, right? Do you know what the meaning of antonym is? The opposite, yes, the opposite meaning. That's one side of it. In other words, knowledge, what is real and what is false. Which is, when I think about it, I just thought about it then, hadn't occurred to me before, but which is sambandha. Sambandha jnana. Krishna establishes the relationship. But not only does he establish the relationship here, he also, in a couple of verses, explains to Arjuna how this knowledge can be utilized in action. Or in inaction. Right? Because one of the things that he talks about is tolerance. Huh? Tolerance. As a result of the fact that we're aware of reality, reality being the spirit soul. That's what's real. But the forms, the bodies that are carrying, the vehicles that are carrying the spirit soul, they're false or temporary. They're real in the sense that they exist, but they only exist for a very short period of time. And then they're finished, or they change. This is a strong theme in this, in the basis of knowledge, the basics of knowledge, if you like, that have been presented in the Bhagavad Gita. So, as a result of understanding the temporality of the material world, apropos, or in relationship to the permanent, which is the soul, the nature of the soul, and then understanding that we're not the body, understanding that we're spiritual by nature and that we are eternal, then Krishna says basically, you need to tolerate all of this illusion that's going on here. Understand it, understand the reality of illusion, in other words that it doesn't exist and it is temporary, and then tolerate it. Right? This is a very good lesson for devotees. We have to learn how to be tolerant. We'll explore that a little bit later on, how to be tolerant of each other. What's being tolerant of circumstance, we have to be tolerant of the people that we have to work with, for example. We have to be tolerant of ourselves. That can be pretty hard enough as it is. Because you know, each one of us is a complex character. Or we like to think of ourselves as being complex characters, and sometimes we manifest as somewhat complex, which is the nature of the soul. Another thing that Krishna discusses in this section of the Bhagavad Gita is the nature of the soul itself. It's permanent, it exists, and so forth. But then he also talks about. This is not a very good thing. Could somebody do me a favour?
Yep.
My computer bag is upstairs. In the front of the computer bag there's a bunch of coloured pens. Yeah. My whiteboard pens are in the front of the bag.
Okay. Bring
pens.
Just
pens. Good. Yeah, they're permanent markers. They're kind of what we want. They're good pens. Same brand, but they won't come off. So, the other I didn't write that down on my notes, but it just came to me before. You'll see it in the in your worksheets. Who's doing the worksheets? Yep. The worksheets. In the worksheets, there's a long list of the qualities of the spirit soul. Oh, we might come to that later when the pens come and we'll look at that. Let's have a look here. There are a number of sub points in all of this as well that we need to look at. What we can look at. Anybody have any comments or questions? It's pretty simple stuff. Okay, we'll try to go through this quickly. Right. Krishna says, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for that or for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. So he's basically saying you're not very learned actually. You're speaking learned words, but you're focusing on the wrong thing. You're not concentrating on that which is permanent, but you're considering that which is part of the temporary or the false world. There's an interesting statement here. Arjuna argued, this is on page 88, or you got 88 there? In the purport, Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology, but he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul and the supreme is even more important. Right, and of course this is the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. You're not the body, you're a spirit soul, you're a servant of Krishna. So the first principle is to surrender to Krishna. And that's the ultimate teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita finishes with surrender to Krishna. That's where the Bhagavatam takes off, from that point. So the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us more important than religious formularies, which are good for ordering and creating a peaceful society and so forth, but the real purpose of religious formularies are to bring us to this understanding of spirit over matter, if you like. Whereas really Arjuna was, he was promoting religious activities, but not with the core focus of spirit over matter. Because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. And as he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. So Krishna is saying, don't lament. And with some very good reasons now as to why you shouldn't lament. Why? Because, you know, if the change of body, for example, the change of body is going on for everybody, all of the time. Hiras tatra namuyati. A sober person's not bewildered by the change because he sees, yes, this is the nature of the material world. Change is a constant. You can't get rid of it. What is constant, though, is this principle of the spirit soul. So this is really what Krishna is now going to focus on, this point of understanding the difference between matter and spirit. First point he makes. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. These are really good verses. Most of these verses, I mean, it's not recommended that you learn all of these, but my suggestion is that this particular section of the Bhagavad Gita contains so much essential information for preaching. We should really know it.
Before that, I didn't understand the point. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or
sociology.
That means he's saying that should not be so, because that's Arjuna's argument.
Yeah.
So you mean that is wrong?
What?
That religious principles should be more important than politics or sociology.
That was his
argument. Yes.
But mere show of religiosity doesn't necessarily mean an understanding of spiritual principles.
So what Krishna is saying is all of those topics are not so important.
As yes.
As the matter.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But you know,
there's no there comparison between those two.
There are people who come, I've said this many times, there are people who come to the temple, right, and pray and put some money in the donation box and everything. But what are they praying for? Gimme. Right, that's their prayer. It's not based on a spiritual understanding of, yes, so put it this way, it's the idea is, Krishna, please serve me. Or, it's a business transaction at best, right? I'll give you $2, you give me $80,000 a year. Right? Now they're coming to the temple, and so there is some religious, right? Going to the temple and praying to God is religious, but it isn't necessarily spiritual. Is it?
No, here my confusion was whether there was a kind.
Yes, so Krishna is saying politics,
sociology,
and religious principles, mundane religious principles, because he says, sava dharma paricca jap, kick them all out, right? Abandon all varieties of religious principles. We say religious, because you know we use the word religious synonymously with spiritual life also. But in this case it means religiosity, more for a show.
More of rules and regulations.
Rules and regulations, formularies. Yes. Actually that comes up a bit later on. Where does it come up? Was it in there? Yes. And he did not know that knowledge about our soul and the Supreme is even more important than religious formularies. Text 12. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these things, nor in the future, so any of us cease to be. This is a very important verse. This verse defeats the Mayavad interpretation that when one becomes liberated, one then merges with the Brahman and becomes one with the Brahman. Right? We say when you become one with Krishna, you may become one in desire, or in other words, you cooperate with Krishna, but not that you lose your identity. Because Krishna says, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. So if he says that we all exist, because my body say, no, but that means we all exist as Brahman. Well, we do. Yes, that's true. We do exist as Brahman, but we still maintain our identity. We don't, and that's what Krishna says. We are spiritual by nature, but we have an eternal identity. The Mayavadi theory, this is in the third, this is the first sentence of the third paragraph. The Mayavadi theory that after liberation, the individual soul, separated by the covering of Maya or illusion, will merge into the impersonal Brahman and lose its individual existence is not supported herein by Lord Krishna, the supreme authority. The Mayavadi may argue, this is going down 11 lines, the Mayavadi may argue that the individuality spoken of by Krishna is not spiritual but material. Even accepting the argument that the individuality is material, then how can one distinguish Krishna's individuality? If your individuality is illusion, that means Krishna's illusion. So then why, as Prabhupada puts it, then why bother reading the Bhagavad Gita? If he's just another illusion like the rest of us, then there's no point in hearing from him. Even accept that. Krishna affirms his individuality in the past and confirms his individuality in the future also. He has confirmed his individuality in many ways, and impersonal Brahman has been declared to be subordinate to him. That's a little later. Krishna has maintained spiritual individuality all along. If he is accepted as an ordinary conditioned soul in individual consciousness, then his Bhagavad Gita has no value as authoritative scripture. A common man with all the four defects of human frailty is unable to teach that which is worth hearing. The Gita is above such literature. No mundane book compares with the Bhagavad Gita. When one accepts Krishna as an ordinary man, the Gita loses all importance. The Mayavadi argues that the plurality mentioned in this verse is conventional and that refers to the body. But previous to this verse, such a bodily conception is already condemned. After condemning the bodily conception of living entities, how was it possible for Krishna to place a conventional proposition on the body again? Never was there a time when they did not exist, nor in the future. Nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So we're all individuals now, and we will be individuals in the future, and we always were individuals in the past. This is clarified. Next verse. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body, from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So this eternal living entity is always in a state of flux, being carried by the material body from one birth to the next birth, and then within the birth from boyhood, childhood to youth, middle age, old age, then passing out of that body into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So, every living entity is passing through these different stages of existence. You know, it's said that every 7 years the body has a complete molecular and atomic change. So the body that I've got now is not the body that I had when I was a baby. Mind you, when my mother sees me, she still recognises me as the same person. And yet the body's completely changed. Now each one of us must have some realisation of this point, even if we're very young. The change of body. It's interesting though, the body appears to be the same. You know, when I was a kid, 4 years old, I was walking down the road with my thongs on, and there was a broken beer bottle on the road. And it was, you know, the bottom of the broken beer bottle, and it had on one side a jaggy bit, and then on the other side a jaggy bit. And me and my intelligence not working very well actually, I thought I could put my foot in between those bits and not get cut. Right? I don't know why I was daydreaming. So I trod on the glass, and have a guess what happened? I cut my foot. Quite badly. And so, you know, on my foot, you can still see that you can very clearly see the scars where I cut myself when I was 4 years old. So it looks like it's the same body, right? It's quite powerful. The illusion is quite powerful. We think it's the same body because it appears to be the same body, but actually, this, according scientifically, it's changing all the time. It has this appearance of permanence, but if we analyze it very carefully, we can see actually it's changing all the time. And it actually requires some cultivation to come to this, to rise above it, and to see it from that perspective as something which is just a vehicle which is carrying me from place to place. And again here, Prabhupada again in the purport here has another comment about the Mayavad philosophy. Again, down the bottom. The Mayavadi theory of oneness of the spirit soul cannot be entertained on the ground that the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces as a fragmental portion. Such cutting into different individual souls would make the supreme cleavable or changeable. This is another argument against the Brahman becoming divided up by illusion, if you like. Because the concept is everything is Brahman, but part of the Brahman has submitted to or has become influenced by illusion. The Prabhupada says that's not possible because the pramana cannot be cut. A portion of it can't be taken away. Such cutting into different individual souls would make the Supreme cleavable or changeable, against the principle of the Supreme Soul being unchangeable. But, as he points out here, what happens is the spirit soul, which is already an eternal part and parcel of Krishna, right? It's already a separated part. It has that feature as its characteristic. Has, rather than become separated by being illusioned, it has the tendency, chara, Prabhupada mentions here, we have the tendency, as part of our characteristic, to get covered over by the influence of the material energy. It's not that the Supreme Brahman has become part of, the Supreme Brahman has become covered, the Supreme Brahman never becomes covered. But rather, we are eternally a portion, if you like, or a part of that Supreme Brahman. And one of the characteristics of that portion is that it's chara, or fallible, and can get covered over and lose sight of its eternal nature, the eternal characteristics of the spirit soul. And so therefore what happens is we get covered over by this material body, and then as a result of the workings of the material energy we start thinking ourselves as a product of the material energy rather than being spiritual by nature.
Then what's the point in saying we are part and parcel of Krishna? I thought, I really was always thinking that, it is to say that Krishna looks and then that's how the jivas are formed, or even the breath of the Lord, the universe is formed.
Mm-hmm.
So it is just,
but we're not
breath,
formed.
But not his...
we're eternal. We're not created. The bodies that we've got are created and destroyed, but we are not. And Krishna says, Mamai Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. You're my Ansa, part. You're a part of me. Just like your child is a part of you. Right? But she's also separate from you.
But when we say that the Lord is the originator of everything.
Yes.
So it doesn't mean that they won't come from him. From seed.
Well, that's one of the mysteries of the Bhagavad Gita that we're going to explore. But we do come from him, in that he's the Godhead, if you like, that upon which everything rests. Later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Right? So we're all dependent upon Krishna, so in that sense we come from him. Or we are supported by him, right? But that's just the terminology that we use because, you know, we see beginnings, middles and ends. But actually, there is no beginning to the spirit soul, just as there is no beginning to Krishna. So Krishna is seen as the prime entity that is the support of all other entities.
When we say that everything belongs to Krishna,
yes.
Everything is basically Krishna. There's nothing that's why we say that even...
Yes, but it exists, you're right, but it exists in different waves or in different phases. You know what I mean? It exists in different relationships to each other. So we get the material energy, which is called separated energy also, but it is unconscious. Then we get the living entity, who is separated energy from Krishna, but is conscious. The material energy has no free will. It just works according to Krishna's direction. We should work in Krishna's direction, but we don't. We have individuality, right? So these are the it exists in different features. The energy of Krishna exists in different features. It's all coming from him. But this unique, the living entity is a very unique energy because he is part and parcel of Krishna, but separated from Krishna, and he does what he likes. Right? In fact, he's like Krishna in that regard. We are like Krishna in that regard. It's interesting, I wanted to discuss this a little bit later on. There's an interesting sentence, which we'll look at and explore the meaning of on that point. Now, okay, so we have this tendency to chara, means we fall down into the under the influence of the material energy, and then as a result, then we go through these different changes of body, and then when this body's finished, we then carry into the next body and go through the same set of changes. Krishna mentions here, dhirastatra namuyati, a sober person is not bewildered by these changes. Then comes an interesting, that's the knowledge, if you like. That's the sambandha jnana. Then, what you should do as a result of understanding that principle. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of the body, you could say, right? The non-permanent appearance of the body, which manifests in happiness and distress. And their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. Right? They arise from sense perception, O sign of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So, understanding the permanent nature of the soul and the temporary nature of the material world, one has to cultivate this tolerance of the changes that are going. In other words, you know, your grandfather and your teacher, they're going to die. Right? We can't do anything about that. In fact, Prabhupada mentions, you know, actually Krishna, Arjuna should be happy because they're pious souls, they're pious persons. They'll more than likely attain the spiritual realm. So we should be happy for that, not the fact that that you have to kill them. But actually, though, and if they don't go to the spiritual realm, well, at least they'll be rejuvenated and will take birth in the heavenly planet for superior enjoyment that they already have now, right? So one has to tolerate these changes. Everybody goes through these changes. Birth, death, old age and disease. Everybody has to go through these changes. So, why lament? Oh, best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation. So this is important also. One has to be tolerant in the face of difficulties and not get too carried away by one's successes. Because, you know, you'll be successful now, but you'll be more than likely failing again tomorrow. Huh? It just reminds me of football. You know, they kick a goal, jump up and down, hug each other. Then the opposition kicks a goal.
Oh,
man.
Oh, terrible.
Huh? It's classic. Or look at the kids. Huh? Kids are really happy 1 minute, then they fall over, run to mummy. No? Mum calms them down, then they're all happy again, then they fall over again. I used to hate it when I was a kid. I had to cry all the time. Where am I going to stop crying? You know, because when you're crying, you know, so you get so worked, you know, everything gets worked out, you have no control. Huh? Your parents say, no, it's all right, pull yourself together. It's embarrassing, actually, isn't it? Material existence is totally embarrassing. So what one has to develop this tolerance. It's the second instruction in the Bhagavad Gita, very important. First of all, not the body, you're spiritual by nature, but then as a result of that, we have to learn to tolerate the comings and goings of the material world, which will be exhilarating one moment and totally distressing the next. Anybody notice that? And, you know, we wish, oh, I wish this would stop. Huh? I wish I didn't have to cry all the time.
You still look for that honey, bro. That one drop of honey.
The honey?
You still
yeah.
look for that.
Yeah, we're looking for
that
it.
That gift's going to come.
Well, Krishna mentions here in the Bhagavad Gita that it is unlikely to manifest. So, you know, tolerance, dependability, reliability, these are qualities of a devotee actually that need to be cultivated sometimes in order to be successful. The example Prabhupada gives is of Lord Chaitanya taking sannyas. Sannyas is a painstaking endeavor, usually brought about by the fact that one will be separated from one's family. But for a higher principle, Lord Chaitanya was prepared as a young man to renounce his family for preaching and teaching Krishna consciousness. Right? Setting the example that making advancement in spiritual life requires effort, and sometimes that effort will bring with it a degree of difficulty, but one has to tolerate it. The comings and goings of the material world are false. They're temporary, they're illusory, it's nescience. And yet we put great faith in them. Well, this is what comes about as a result of that. We have to learn that the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, the cultivation of spiritual understanding, is what is permanent. And it doesn't hurt to renounce or to give up things of the material world to cultivate that which is spiritual. Materialistic people have a great deal of difficulty in understanding this point. I think it comes up later on in the next section. You know, what is night? What is it? What is daytime for the enlightened? Is nighttime for the conditioned soul? So the materialistic people look at the devotees, and just like the lady said to me the other day, yesterday, she said, do you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning? Every day? Yeah. So, you know, rising early in the morning for them, it's like, what do you do that for? And there's no real tangible, you know, where's the benefit? From a materialistic point of view. Where's the benefit of rising early in the morning when you could be sleeping? But as the lady understands, look, lying in bed, working hard on a material platform, okay, you may get some more money, you may get some more learning, you may get some more power or influence, but what is it? It's temporary. It doesn't last. I'll put that aside. Even if there's some difficulty, I'll go for that which is permanent and which can't be taken away from me. Anything that I work for in the material world ultimately will be taken away. It's not going to last. But making advancement in spiritual life, that's what's permanent. That's what I'll work towards, even if it means sacrificing or taking on some difficulty. Right? In fact, it will mean. But Krishna says, a person who is not disturbed by the happiness and distress that may come about, that will come about as a result of material existence, is eligible for liberation. That's one of that's the eligibility. Based on this knowledge. What is that knowledge? Again, na sato vijite bhavo na bhavo vijite sataha upayo vidrishtam taspanayo tatpadashapi. Those who have seen the truth understand of the nasat, or the temporary, there is no endurance. Right? This material body, it doesn't last. The spirit soul, however, is never destroyed. Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. So the permanent is the spirit soul. That's what we want to concentrate on. The impermanent is the material energy. We'll deal with that as is necessary, but not more. Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existent, the material body, there is no endurance. And of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. This is a point that's accepted by the personalists and the impersonalists. Ultimately, everybody has to accept this point. Now, here's an interesting statement that Prabhupada makes in one of the, in the purport here. One can understand, this is fifth or sixth line in the second paragraph, before that actually, Prabhupada talks about the changing body and the permanence of the soul, is what it's about. The body itself is always changing, so therefore impermanent, doesn't exist, the spirit soul is permanent and is always exists. Then Prabhupada makes this comment in the second paragraph. One can understand the nature of the Supreme by thorough study of oneself. The difference between oneself and the Supreme being understood as the relationship between the part and the whole. Anybody know what that means? Yeah, what's your realization?
In the heart, there's actually both the super soul and us as a very tiny fragmental part, as an individual entity as well.
Mm-hmm.
So both of them exist there, but they are separate.
Yep.
One is complete, and that's the source, which is the super soul.
Yeah.
And the individual entity, which is ourselves, which is this
the permanent spirit soul,
yeah. That's a very tiny, fragmented part of that.
Yes.
So they're
both different, but they still exist inside the heart.
Okay, that's interesting.
They are qualitatively the same, quantitatively different.
Qualitatively the same, quantitatively different. But Prabhupada says here, one can understand the nature of the Supreme by thorough study of oneself.
As like a drop of ocean, drop of water from ocean is qualitatively same as the whole ocean. So if we understand the chemical composition of the drop of ocean, we can understand the whole ocean.
Yeah.
So it's same as Prabhu mentioned.
Yeah, qualitatively. Okay, that's a good point. By thorough study of the drop of water, you can understand what the whole of the ocean is like. So if we study the nature of the soul, then we can get an understanding of what the Supreme Soul is like. Yeah, that's good. The difference between oneself and the Supreme being understood as the relationship between the part and the whole. That's covered by that point too, right?
Mm.
Yeah, that's good. Any other comments on that?
I think they should mention the same point as brought up. I mean, we as, Krishna is complete, and from him come complete wholes. And we as jivas have complete facility to acquire our completeness, i.e. understand ourselves and our relationship with Krishna.
Mm.
So the study of ourselves includes knowing who we are, as well as sambandha jnana.
Yeah.
And I guess
what our relationship is with the whole.
And that makes us...
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That which pervades, text 17, that which pervades the entire body. So that last verse, Nasa Tola Vijate Bhava, that concentrates on this, that which is real and that which is impermanent. Or unreal. Unreal doesn't have any endurance, the real lasts, it's permanent. Text 17, that which pervades the entire body you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. And the important point here is that the consciousness of the living entity is spread throughout the whole body, even though it's described as being situated in the heart. So if I come up to you and stamp on your toe, you feel it. Because you're aware of what's going on all throughout the body. That's the nature of consciousness. Prabhupada explains how the soul is the source of consciousness, and how is it in this first book where he explains from the beating of the heart? The influence of the atomic soul can be spread all over a particular body. According to the Mundaka Upanishad, this atomic soul is situated in the heart of every living entity. And because the measurement of the atomic soul is beyond the power of appreciation of material scientists, some of them assert foolishly that there is no soul. That's in reference also to the fact that it's described as being one ten thousandth the tip of a hair. Is that right? Is it 10,000? 1/10,000. 1/10,000. 1/10,000th part of the upper portion of the hair. So very, very small. So because you can't be seen, people say, oh, not there. Huh? The individual atomic soul is definitely there in the heart, along with the super soul. And thus all the energies of bodily movement are emanating from this part of the body. The corpuscles which carry the oxygen from the lungs gather energy from the soul. When the soul passes away from this position, the activity of the blood-generating fusion ceases. Medical science accepts the importance of the red corpuscles, but it cannot ascertain that the source of the energy is the soul. Medical science, however, does admit that the heart is the seat of all energies of the body. Nice. Text 18, the material body of the indestructible, immeasurable and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore fight, O descendant of Bharata. Right, so you can't kill the soul and you can't save the body. Like Gangeshwara said in class this morning, all doctors' patients die. Huh? Was it yesterday? Who gave class yesterday? Oh, Apple said that. Yeah. Yep. All patients die. You might be able to halt the dying temporarily or slow it down, but nobody's been able to keep their patient alive forever. They haven't been able to keep themselves alive. So don't lament. Right? That's right at the beginning. Arjuna is lamenting. And Krishna says, don't lament. And here again he's saying the same thing. Everybody has to die. It's inevitable. So don't lament. And be aware of the fact that the spirit soul doesn't die. Actually, the spirit soul is eternal. All that's happening is that they're changing bodies. And of course later on he gives an example in the next section. You know, it's just like you put on your pyjamas when you go to bed. Right? Nobody, it's not a big deal. Changing bodies is not a big deal. It's just like changing clothes. Nobody worries about changing their clothes. Yeah. So the body isn't so important. You should fight and don't sacrifice the core, the real religiosity of based on the proper understanding of the spirit soul as separate from the body, for some material bodily consideration. In the last three sentences of this purport. As soon as the spirit soul, this is text 18, as soon as the spirit soul is out of this material body, the body begins to decompose. Therefore it is the spirit soul which maintains this body. Take the soul out, and then in a very short period of time, you've got a very smelly mess. Huh? You know, which really indicates, you know, Krishna and Krishna's presence keeps things ordered and organized. Right? So when the spirit soul, Krishna's representative, is present within the body, then everything is ordered and organized. It all works according to a system. Take the spirit soul out and it all deteriorates. It all starts falling apart. You get chaos, right? The body itself is unimportant. Right? The body is unimportant.
You can take it to
extremes. You can take it to extremes, but we're not extremists. The Arjuna was advised to fight and not sacrifice the cause of religion for material bodily considerations, the real cause of religion, if you like. The body itself is unimportant. Of course, it's not in one sense it is unimportant, but in another sense it's not. Without the body, and without the body functioning properly, then one can't prosecute the cause of religion, that's self-realization. So, on the one hand, what's being said here is over-attachment for the material body is not necessary. A little bit later on in the sixth chapter, Krishna explains you have to be regulated and so forth. Then it's interesting. Krishna says, neither he who thinks the living entity the slayer, nor he who thinks it slain is acknowledged, for the self slays not, nor is slain. Now this doesn't mean that one can just go around killing and, you know, say, oh, you know, you're not the body, you're a spirit soul, you're eternal. Right? That doesn't justify killing. The killing can only be done when it is ordained by higher authority, which is the case here. Right? Can't be misused. Yeah, here, Prabhupada says, this does not at all encourage killing of the body. The Vedic injunction is Ma himsyat sarvabhutani, never commit violence to anyone. That's the principle, right? Killing the body of anyone without authority is abominable and is punishable by the law of the state. Arjuna, however, is being engaged in killing for the principle of religion and not politically. So,
one point. They said that even if you try to kill a person, you can't kill them unless the Lord wants that person dead.
Yeah.
In that case.
So if you kill them, that's what he wanted.
How is it that sometimes people are successful in committing suicide or something and they become ghosts because that is not the time to die? They should not have been successful at all.
There's a difference between what Krishna wants and what he allows. Right? The material world is designed in such a way so that you are actually able to do things that Krishna doesn't want. Right?
Suicide is also one part of that he allows.
Yeah, or many things. But that's one of it. He allows it. Because we have such strong desire to do it. Right? We want to enjoy like a dog, you can be a dog. We want to enjoy like a hog, fine, be a hog. I want to enjoy like a demigod, no worries, enjoy like a demigod. But there are reactions for what you do. To underline the reality of existence in the material world. Huh? So there's what Krishna wants. And because, you know, people will say this. We say to them, please surrender to Krishna, it'll be good for you. And they say, yes, yes, when Krishna wants, I will. But Krishna wants us all the time to do that, what's good for us. And we want something else. That's not what Krishna wants, it's what you want. You're just putting it off. Right? Pretty?
actually in the support of text searching, which I shouldn't understand.
Okay, let's go back to that.
Okay.
Yep.
A serious reflection to me is that this self is present in each and everybody and is known as Paramatma, who is different from the individual living entity. When the sky is reflected on the water, the reflections represent both the sun and the moon and the stars also. The stars can be compared to the living entities, and the sun or moon to the Supreme Lord. And that's talking to the right hand and saying how it relates.
Well, that thought did occur to me too. And there must be a way to understand it. Now you've brought it up, let's have a look at it. The theory of reflection can be applied to the super soul, who is present in each and every individual body and is known as the Paramatma. He is different from the individual living entity. When the sky is reflected in water, the reflections represent both the sun and the moon and the stars also. The stars can be compared to the living entities and the sun or the moon to the Supreme Lord. The individual fragmental spirit soul is represented by Arjuna and the Supreme Soul is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. Okay, well, the theory of reflection can be applied to the super soul.
Probably we said that without the sun and the moon, stars can't be given reflection. They can't be
having. No, that's not it. That's not it.
It's more like when you look into the ocean or a water.
Yes.
You look into that, you see out of the reflection, you see one single sun and several stars. So probably trying to say that there is only one Krishna and then everything else is part of
that. Yeah. Yes. When you look in the water, then you'll see all of the stars plus the sun and the moon. The sun and the moon are likened to the Paramatma, right? And the stars are the living entities. That's all it says. He is different from the individual living entity. When the sky is reflected in water, the reflections represent both the sun and the moon and the stars. The stars can be compared to the living entities and the sun or moon to the Supreme Lord.
Why the reflection? Why
don't we
just relate it directly to the sun,
the
moon and the stars?
I don't know. I'll have to have a look at it. There is... We have to understand what the theory of reflection is being related to as an example, right? And it's not immediately clear.
What it means is that the material world is a reflection. So living entities are existing in the material body from the super souls also.
Yes, that's a possibility.
Or reflecting within ourselves and looking into our heart and we see both there.
Yes. In the Bhagavatam there's the example of the pail of water. Right? Mm-hmm. If you look in the pail of water, you can see there's an it's not the same example though. The movement of the water.
Okay. Other way.
Yes.
The other way of seeing is like when we are in the material world, just as in the sky there is a sun and moon, there are stars which are compared to living entities in the super soul. That is the same in the material world and the spiritual world also. Even after we get liberation, it's the same. That doesn't change. There is only one sun and there are many stars, but that's the same.
Yes, that's a good explanation. Pretty smart fellow. Not just a pretty face. Yes, that's the point. That is the point. We exist in the spiritual world individually, right? And in the material world, which is a reflection, right? Just as the, that's the example. When you look in the reflection, the same relationship is there, and when you look at them without looking at the reflection, the relationship is the same. How's that sound? Makes sense of it anyway.
Good, thank you.
Prabhuram.
That sounds like a way of explaining how the same super soul is resident in every single person's individual heart.
That's right. Yep, that also. But he does say, these fragmental portions are eternally so, right? These fragmental portions are eternally so, and even after liberation, the individual soul remains the same, fragmental. But once liberated, he lives an eternal life in bliss and knowledge with the personality of Godhead. In other words, Prabhupada's using this to counter the Mayavadi theory. Right? The Mayavadi theory is that after liberation, we merge. Right? So that's why the theory of reflection can be applied to the super soul, who is present in each and every individual body and is known as the Paramatma. He is different from the individual, so it's based on this point of difference, right? And identity. He is different from the individual living entity. When the sky is reflected in water, the reflections represent both the sun and the moon and the stars also. The stars can be compared to living entities and the sun or moon to the Supreme Lord. In the liberated state and in the conditioned state, they still maintain their relationship. So, yeah, good one. Thank you. Another comment?
This is comment from in the verse number 12, Krishna says that there was never a time when I didn't listen to the eternality concept of individuality.
Yes.
So like when living entity in the material world, when he wants to go to the when he wants to merge with the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, Brahma Jyoti, does he lose his individuality over there, or does he is he put into an animated suspension?
You never lose your identity, but you can feel like you've become one. But your individuality remains, and that's why it's mentioned in the 10th canon of the Bhagavatam, that one imagines oneself liberated. Right? One thinks oneself liberated, but actually one comes down from that platform because the sense of identity is not satisfied. It can't be exercised, and because that's our original position, we become lonely there. A Prabhupada was once asked, you know, why do the living entities come down from the demand? And Prabhupada thought about it for a little while and said, you get lonely. Everything's all one, but we don't like things being one. We like variety. We like relationships. There's no pleasure or fun in everything being all one. Sometimes you see devotees will get their prasadam and mash it all up together. Get the sweets and the khichdi and everything. You don't like it. We like sweet. We like the khichdi with the pickle. Maybe we'll make some adjustments, but not all. We like enjoyment. Okay. We're instructed to tolerate the passage of time and the changes that come with it, basically, in this section. As a result of understanding that the material is impermanent and will always change, you can't do anything about it. Dronacharya Bhishma Dev will die. And you can't stop that from happening. That will take place. It's inevitable. But the spirit soul is eternal. So our activities should be based on an understanding of the eternality of the spirit soul, and on activities that are meant to support and nourish that understanding. And whatever difficulties might come about as a result of that, based on the comings and goings of the material energy, then we have to tolerate it. We need to cultivate knowledge so that we can see these things, we can understand what's matter and what's spirit. We need to cultivate tolerance of the changes, and we need to cultivate perseverance. If we're looking for permanence, you know, we're looking for a state of permanence in the material world. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for a steady state of consciousness in the material world. So we have to recognize that which is steady, that's the spirit soul, that's us, and separate that from all of the changes that are going on around us. And then be tolerant of those changes. They're not going to stop. They'll keep going. And going and going and going. That was a point that Apple was making yesterday also. You know, we've been filling our belly faithfully 3 times a day for as many years and days as we've been in existence, right? Does that mean then tomorrow we don't have to do that? The belly's going to say, hey, feed me. Fill me up. Right? Stomach doesn't say, you've been a faithful servant all of these years, today you can have a holiday. You don't have to serve me. For your, you can have some long service leave. Stomach says, fill me up. Fast day? Hey, come on, fill me up. So, we have to tolerate these pushings and then develop perseverance on the path of making spiritual progress. There are also some descriptions of the soul, actually, that I didn't go into here. The soul is eternal. It doesn't change. The material body changes. It pervades the whole body, right?
Yeah.
It is indestructible. It is very small, right? The soul is very, very small. Palagra satta bhagasya satta ta kalpitasya cha pago jiva savigyaya sacha natyaya kalpate. If you take the upper part of a hair and divide that into 100 parts, and then again take one of those 100 parts, right? And chop, imagine that, 1/100 of the tip of your hair, you take that, and then further divide it up into another 100 parts. So it's very, very small. It's not possible to see the spirit soul. What else is there?
Eternal.
And he's not killed, yeah. Not slain. When the body is slain. No birth nor death. Oh, it's going into the next. That's moving on. That's the next section. Okay, so for an exercise, how's the time going there?
It's 20 to 12.
Okay, good. What I'd like you to do is break up into your groups. And share some stories with each other. Not tall stories. Oh, they can be tall stories if you like. Of how we've experienced difficulties in Krishna consciousness. Stories of tolerance in adversity while serving Krishna. Huh? Tolerance in adversity while serving Krishna. Then one person from each group can relate a story. Tolerance in adversity. Because most of you have probably had a fairly easy going of things and might not have so many stories.